You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Sound Poetry, Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 FM. And I'm your host on Sound Poetry, introducing you with great pleasure to Jessica Gigot, who is a farmer of sheep, but has many other talents. She is certainly a poet and musician, but has a lovely farm by the name of Harmony Fields up in Bow, Washington, where she makes artisan sheep cheese and has evidently a very nice herb garden. Welcome to Sound Poetry. I should first
thank you for having me.
Welcome you in.
Thank you.
And of course, the book of poems that you first published was called Flood Patterns, which I haven't read any of, which was 2015, about 6 years ago, right? And this one is quite fresh and new, Feeding Hour, your second collection. And we're going to be hearing you read from Feeding Hour, which goes from the whole cycle of life on the outside and the inside, from east to west, season to season. We're going to hear a great landscape of verse here with all the seasons and cycles of life included. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Jessica, if you'd like, about your interesting name, Gigot.
Well, yeah, my name, Gigot, is my father's last name, which I kept after I got married, and it's French for leg of lamb, and we always thought that was sort of entertaining growing up. I didn't realize it was potentially going to indicate my profession. So we do sell a lot of Gigot off the farm. And if you go to Julia Child's cookbook, she has many wonderful Gigot recipes. So I'm quite honored to have that name at this point.
Yes. So your herb farm, do you go to farmers markets with your herbs?
Yeah, you know, we started off as a produce farm, and so we grew a lot of fall vegetables and then the herbs as well. And then we had a couple pet sheep that multiplied, and we started to play around with their milk and homestead milking, and then had an idea to make it into something more. And so we went through the process of building out the creamery and getting all the licenses we needed. So we go to the market primarily with the cheeses. We have fresh cheeses that we make between April and October with just our sheep's milk. We're kind of a micro dairy is sort of our title, because we're very small and artisan, but we also sell herbs as well. And we dry them and sell them fresh. But yeah, the herbs and produce have gotten smaller, and the sheep have expanded and multiplied. So most of our land now is for pasture for the sheep.
And also besides that, with regards to the sheep, are you the shearer?
No, I learned that very early on, that there are some wonderful shearers around here, and they kind of travel to the different sheep farms. So we have someone come actually twice a year to shear our sheep. And we do it twice a year just because, you know, in the spring, we don't want them to be too hot, and we need to make room for them on the stanchion, so they don't need to have that huge coat. And then in the fall, we have them shorn so that we can watch their weights as they're pregnant with their babies and make sure that they're eating enough and doing well.
And in connection with the sheep and the wool, you do evidently from a couple of your poems have taken weaving classes.
Yeah, I have. You know, I'm not a great weaver. My great grandmother was a master weaver, and I have a lot of her wonderful fabrics and tablecloths, and I do mention that in one of the poems. Maybe I'll read that later on.
Yeah.
I'm a knitter and a spinner too. And she also, she was also a master spinner. I don't have as much time for those crafts right now, but we do make, you know, wool and yarn. We don't just throw it away, even though we're primarily cheesemakers. So it is nice to have those items too. We try to use every part of the animal.
And do you dye the wool with natural dyes or just use the raw color from the sheep?
We just use the raw color. You know, our breed is the kind of the American milk breed, and they can be either white or brown or speckled. So we get some really beautiful, I mean, natural browns and grays and whites too.
Yeah. Well, weaving is a good word for versifying, isn't it, in a way? Why don't you begin and weave your way through some poems? In fact, read two or three of your poems in a row with a slight break in between, and that'll give people a sense of the flavor and the style of your work.
Reading Hour is broken up into four sections, and the first section does contain a lot of my sheep poems. It's called Birth Stories. And so I want to read the first poem from that section, which is called Fleece. Fleece. The sheep are shorn two times a year. In fall, steam rises from white, now slender bodies that huddle together, bare shoulder to bare shoulder. By now, each belly is full of new life. Without a half year's worth of wool, we can measure the swell of each ewe as she matures toward motherhood. Their lanolin-soaked fleeces are clouds piled in the barn, waiting to be cleaned and carded and spun into yarn. We celebrate this wonder, fiber transformed from grass, mindful that another season has passed. And I'd like to read, St. Bridget's Day is around the 1st of February. And that is a time usually when our ewes are very close to lambing. And so I enjoy this poem as well. The sun comes to us between a break of clouds, and I swirl underneath the glow until I can no longer pretend that it is warm. Snowdrops, bluish nettles, the soft calls from burrows. These are just slight signs of hope, revealing how far we have come. The ewes are swelling with milk, almost ready to burst. A spiral fire burns in their bellies. For us, for everything. And I'll read one more poem from this section. It's called On Farm Research. And you mentioned the herbs. And because we have so many different types of herbs here, we actually have a really interesting population of pollinators as well. I guess that's our one other crop here that we don't really do anything with. And we had a scientist that worked here for many seasons identifying the different types of bees that were in the herbs. And so it was just, there were some interesting moments watching him work. On Farm Research. The entomologist comes to the farm to capture and record the diversity of bees in our fields. He is trying to find out how many and what kind of bees are still here. How bad is this die-off, the reported widespread hive collapse? We have a lot of bees here, he tells me, such as the wool carder bee. They migrated from England and collect hairs from plants to line their egg cells, harvesters of wool to cushion and insulate their young. We will shear our sheep in September. I hope to knit my baby a blanket using their carded and spun wool. I will wrap it around her luminous thin skin in winter. Our flock grazes beyond the herbs and vegetables and sweeping motion of his sword-like net. I watch as the bees, the scientist, the plants, and sheep do their work, separate and also glaringly interwoven.
There's the weaving in the interwoven. Very much life in that on-farm research. And just as you're talking about, say, natural cycles, the shearing of the sheep in September, there is often in some of your poems a portentous thought For example, about the passing of bees, the disappearing of bees, which is a very calamitous collapse should that happen worldwide for people. But in St. Bridget's Day, did you purposely choose St. Bridget because of her being the patron saint of cattle?
Yeah, well, and I think of sheep too. I mean, that's a very important, I mean, I think historically that was a very important time, the sort of preparing for milk, for lambing. And so it's funny how that, you know, we still, I don't know if we, I would say we officially celebrate it here, but it is sort of a marker for us of a transition into a much busier and more frantic time on the farm.
Right. So some calendars might still have the saint's days on them too. But she is also the patron saint of about 20 other things besides sheep and cattle, I noticed. Yeah. So she's an all-round saint, just as many of your poems are around the world poems too. So thank you. That's wonderful. And you don't wish to read any more from the first one, but since you have a number of poems that are definitely poems of the weaving and of birthing and so forth, why don't you read one of the birth poems, Birth Story 4, perhaps?
Okay, yeah, those are just a few of the birth story poems that I had. They didn't all make it into this book, but there was so much we've learned. I mean, this isn't really a book about spring, although I think spring figures prominently because that's such an important time for us and a precarious time as well. Birth Story 4. She has put on weight and regained her glow. She stands with the rest of the flock grazing on new lush pasture. Yes, I am still waiting for her lambs. Past due, they are either alive, dead, or in utero mummies, leather shells of life. All I can do is watch and wait a few more days before we resort to the thrust of modern medicine to force them out.
The life on the farm is probably an anxious one from time to time, especially at birthing time. Because of the difficulty, perhaps, sometimes of the lamb being born healthy and free and the mother surviving, too, from difficult births. But in the nighttime, it seems as though you do undergo certain transformations in your sleep. And the poem that just precedes that, Dream of the West, I think that's a lovely poem that shows how you throw yourself into the world of sheep. Read The Dream of the West.
Okay. You know, and I think since this book came out, I've only done online readings, and I don't know if I've ever read this one at one of the readings, so I appreciate that you brought it up. Dream of the West. Last night I dreamt I was grazing on sagebrush in flocks east of the mountains. Then I stammered over miles to find canyon shelter, river drink. I wasn't alone, surrounded by wind and expanse, basalt columns that wept at dusk. My hooves ached in the dry light, my body sweat under the weight of wool. Who brought me here to feast and fatten? Who turned the feral motherland to field?
Questioning why it isn't all still wild. You call the sheep liminal and ruminant. The liminal idea I like very much too, because it is interesting in terms of sheep. They're often left to great expanses all to themselves. Mm-hmm. They are living out alone with nobody often watching, or if there is someone watching, it's a person that's at some great distance from the actual grazing flock. What is it about this liminal world that you enjoy, which I see a couple of times as a vital word in a poem?
Yeah, well, I think that's from the poem Feeding Hour. And it's really interesting. I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, we had a few pet sheep and we were learning how to take care of them. And this is my husband and I, neither of us grew up on farms. You realize that, you know, your life is not your own. And I, you know, I've had pets, but, you know, to really, you know, start to grow into the farm, you realize, you know, you're kind of on the farm's time scale. And there are pressures and demands that come up because that is what's happening in the natural cycle of the world. Things need to, it's dry, you need to water things. And animals need to be fed multiple times a day. And so for me, you know, sort of the liminal space is, you know, both what's happening in the biology of the sheep and just their, you know, the ruminations, the kind of the wonder, which I mentioned in the poem, fleece of their bodies and what they produce and what they offer, but also the awareness it brings to me and in terms of having to be out there with them, you know, early in the morning and in the evening. I mean, you start to see things that you would never see. And the light is so different in the morning and the evening. And so it really creates these moments where I can ruminate and I can think about things. And it's a fertile place. It's not necessarily easy. I'm not out there writing poems at 6 a.m. I'm doing a lot of work, but you know, sort of that liminal space offers a lot of reflection.
Yes. And liminal too is an interesting word connected to limbo, that it's a place in between. Are these creatures still as wild as they once were, or have we taken so much of the wildness, the nature, out of them by domesticating and herding them and so on? It must be a wonder as you watch them why they do certain things that they do, that they are really creatures on their own, knowing everything instinctually, but you still have that control of them, the kind of foods often that you feed them in the barn, but then you do let them go out in the pasture, right? And they have the day to themselves. And you must wonder sometimes what a world they must live in.
Yeah, no, to watch grazing is, I always like to say pasture has its own grace, because to watch them graze is kind of an amazing thing. I mean, they do that. That's what their bodies are made for. They don't really need much more than grass to produce all of these amazing things. And I think that question of wildness is really interesting, because, you know, in some respects they kind of do what they do, and you don't, you know, it's programmed, it's part of them, but then we do have this control in terms of how we breed them and select them and the choices you make in animal husbandry, which I also like to say I'm more of an animal midwife than an animal husbandry practitioner. I guess in the birthing specifically, you know, they just know what to do. And we'd had sheep for a couple of years before I had my first daughter. And I learned a lot from watching them. I mean, obviously our bodies are very different, but the sort of the calmness, the patience that they demonstrate, and just even with new mothers, knowing what to do instinctively is really powerful.
Well, we'll move on then to digging, and you're going to dig a little deeper. In fact, you actually do some real digging in one or two of the poems, but what have you chosen from this one?
I'd love to read the poem Digging of Irises, if there's time for that one. That one is...
Yes. No. Digging up irises, definitely. Okay. Nothing that you're going to eat, but definitely part of the beauty of a garden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, on the farm, I mean, we have tasks too that are very much farm tasks. And then we also have a garden, which is more where I can play. And I do spend more time thinking, I think, in the garden than I do on the farm some days. This is called Digging Up Irises. My bearded irises bloomed in early May. I dug them up and separated the corms under a sweaty sun. While I worked, I could hear the thumping of the neighbor son's music, then the roar of five teenage boys in a small above-ground pool. Irises represent awareness. I could not see them, but the sounds were as jolting as when the father lectures his son about basketball moves, or when the mother frantically mows at 11 p.m. with headlights, because God forbid a lawn covering farmland should not be longer than a putting green. I made new spaces for these tired roots. I did not complain about the noise. I kept digging and planting, remembering that the veil of separation is thin and life, like a rhizome, is resilient and always connected. The flower speaks, let go. Eventually, the sounds fade to only whispers buried in my chest. The conversation that begins when we turn the world out and point the spade in.
Nice contrast there between the neighbor and their over-cultivated lawn and their life on the basketball and perhaps on the trampoline, whatever they're doing in their yard, which contrasts with your husbanding of the garden, midwifing of the garden, with the corms being dug and replanted. Yeah, very, very interesting. But the irises represent awareness. Nice twist on that, having to do with vision, irises, and of course the plants too, which are a very bold floral excrescence, aren't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this mural was discovered in someone's barn in Skagit County.
Yes.
I've heard of this wonder that they found it, and then it's been restored. And it's so interesting, just the color palette and what is depicted there. So I'm very fortunate that I got to see it at the Northwest Museum of Art. And it's there now, too. I think it's still there.
I look forward to going to see that. Near Mount Vernon somewhere?
Yeah, it's in Laconia is where the...
Laconia, okay.
And it turned out that Bill Cumming was also my husband's painting teacher many years ago. So it was Farmers at the Museum, inspired by William Cumming, Mural of Skagit County Agriculture, 1941. The mural was found in a barn. Now it hangs in a museum painted on commission in 1941 by a soon-to-be-famous 24-year-old. The mural depicts the trades of the time: logging, dairy farming, berry picking, railroad building. The slate sky is a thin margin over male bodies, bending, reaching, crouching. They work in silence, facing away from each other. Slender tan cow hips take center, patiently being milked. I think of how these jobs have changed and how they have not. Just this morning, I was bending over to weed a row of parsley, but new railroads are being stopped. Berry pickers vote to unionize. At least one dairy farm has gone robotic. Still, the simplicity of this scene settles something in me. The cool, natural tones feel like home. As I leave the museum, I run into a farmer friend who has been farming a lot longer than me. We smile and realize that we are both here for the same reason. I don't recognize him at first. We are out of the field, out of context. He just finished delivering vegetables to a nearby restaurant. His hands are coarse. He smiles honestly. I could see him hunched in this mural. Instead, he is outside the painting, in real life, looking back in time.
An excellent positioning there at the end of the real life farmer who seems like he has just walked out of the mural. Yeah, a great idea. And very, what you call, many poems do often take a work of art and write inspirationally, motivated by what images there are, the ekphrastic sort of verse. But this one, and anyone who heard this and is interested can go and Google an image of William Cumming's mural and read your poem again as after looking at it, and just see how you've caught it, how well you've entrapped some of the images and coloration.
Well, he painted it when he was so young, and it, like I said, it's on a canvas, and it was found, pulled it up in the back of a barn, a very old barn in Skagit County. So it's really a wonderful thing that it's been discovered, and it's right. Cool to see.
And it looks like it's still pinned up where it's positioned on the wall with huge pins, I'm sure, but it was done in sailcloth.
Yeah.
Yeah, thick, canvassy sailcloth. Do you have another one from the digging?
Planting the hawthorn tree. I brought home the bare root bundle from the nursery. With an almost ripened baby in my belly, I cannot bend and dig. I ask my husband to dig a hole, hold it straight. I cannot watch because I am chasing our toddler into the barn. He covers the roots and tamps down the tender spring clods solo. Later, I confess my disappointment. I miss the planting. In truth, I wanted to do it myself, my hands sanctifying the tree that will be 20 feet tall when our girls fledge our nest. In the reserve dusk light, he unearths the tree and shovels a new hole. We fill this one together with hearts and soil on our sleeves.
Well, what a dear husband you have to go about the business twice in the same day so that you can have the share of the planting. Yeah, I can understand that, though. Yeah. You want to see it grow as your children grow. Would you like to read for something of how you rode in your own parade on an elephant?
Oh yeah, you know thank you for asking about that one. In this early motherhood stage, I thought a lot about kind of the female lineage within my family, and my great grandmother, the weaver, she came up a lot for me. As well, and an aunt had sent me this newspaper clipping about her, and that's what inspired this poem. An Appleton girl rides elephant in the circus parade. The clipping says she represented the Red Cross in the Barnum and Bailey parade. I hold the faded image in my hand. Smile, wave, smile. Pressed white uniform atop gray wrinkled hide. Her one-story home on the bank of a creek was decorated with retired looms and stringless violins, a museum of all her makings. I remember playing hi-ho cheerio before Grandma wheeled her down the narrow hall to bathe her, feed her. The faint smell of cedar and mint, dust and tired books. They forgot to mention she was the first woman to attend college in her family. If she had all the opportunities I had, would she have traded her craft, the sanctity of her home life, for a workplace? Provider or nurturer, mother or maven, or maybe we can finally have everything, ourselves in our own parade. Riding the elephant in the room, back and forth between home and away.
Delightful idea to have that image of riding the elephant. Exotic in its way, but Barnum and Bailey brings it home, right? And an elephant with a mind of its own, since you have not a total fascination with elephants, but two of your poems have elephants. that one might be a delight for some.
Okay. An elephant with a mind of its own. I still forget things easily these days. Names, meetings, messages. Maybe it's baby brain, maybe it's not. 9 months, Plath's ponderous house pales against the elephants 22-month gestation. A matriarchy, male elephants live in isolation from the collective her. I've tied my trunk to the tail of my mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and Mother Earth. Elephants are now an endangered species. Back at work after 8 weeks, pumping, packing away the evidence of delivery wounds and swell, tightening in the sag before anyone sees any evidence of receptivity. No wonder I can't remember a damn thing. No wonder mothers, like elephants, sometimes just fade out of sight.
Well, you were lucky to see your grandmother with your great-grandmother.
Yeah, it was from early childhood, but it's interesting. In having children, some of the memories came back more clear than they had been previously, especially the Hi-Ho Cheerio. I've been wanting to find that game so I can play it with my daughters as well. So that was the one we did a lot.
Thank you very much, Jessica Gigot, for warming the minds of your listeners in a truly profound way. And we hope that you'll join us again. It was a great pleasure.
Yeah, and thank you for your appreciation of poetry. I always wish there was more poetry on the radio, so this is wonderful that you're offering this. So thank you.
We're glad to provide it, time for it. Yeah. Yes. This is Sound Poetry. I've been your host, David Gilmore, with Jessica Gigot of Bow, Washington.